Welcome to Strong Black Laughs, the show that brings you the Black champions of comedy, brought to you by Netflix and Strong Black Leave. Each week, we talk to comedians who've given us an escape from the bullshit. That job, them kids, and those problems that just won't go away. People who've made us rethink our lives and the world around us. And most of all, made us laugh our asses off. The first time I saw Kim Coles, I was living in a 90s kind of world, just so happy to have my girls. Then I saw Living Single. Sinclair James was the first time I remember a Black woman who didn't have it all together. She was a true free spirit. She was lovable, goofy, she had the heart of gold. Kind of like Phoebe on Friends, except in reverse, because we all know they stole that shit from Living Single. It was also a role that would win her a NAACP award for Outstanding Actress in a Comedy Series. Now, for y'all young people who don't remember Y2K, this was back in the 90s, and it was a great time. A great time to be Black on television. You had Martin, The Jamie Foxx Show, The Wayans Brothers, In Living Color, A Different World, Moesha, The PJs, Hanging with Mr. Cooper, In the House. Now, In the House, that was the one with LL Cool J, and he was always in the house, but he still had a hat on all the time. I don't know. That's kind of rude. I guess he had like an inside kangle. Anyway, it was a very different landscape to the television we have today. Today, it couldn't be just four Black bras living single. Today, it'd have to be four Black friends and that white girl, Kelly, who's always getting into hijinks, guys. Also, that theme song still goes. All the versions of it. Fight me. But back to Kim Coles. She's been a part of some of the biggest Black comedy institutions. I'm talking blackity black. She was in Soul Plane, y'all. She was the host of Showtime at the Apollo. She was an original member of In Living Color. She been out here. Sometimes you meet people and they're exactly who you hope they are. I mean, she is Sinclair, y'all. So put on your finest inside kangol and enjoy the conversation with myself and Kim Coles. Woo, woo, woo. Hello, I'm Janelle James. Welcome to the Strong Black Lead Podcast. I'm here today with comedian extraordinaire, Kim Coles.
Hello, Janelle.
We are living single. Hey, hey. Okay, sorry. Does everybody do that too?
I get that a lot. I get that in the street, and I actually tell people, stop singing. Stop
okay,
singing.
My bad.
Especially because, no, not you, because they get to the part that they don't know the words.
Do what you want.
Right.
It's your world.
Right. So I feel the love.
Well, we already had a little pre-chat, so I already know that Kim is cool as hell. So that's cool.
What
so
sign are you? When's your birthday?
I'm a Libra.
Oh, nice.
What are you?
I know nothing about Libras. I just know I get along with them. Capricorn.
Supposedly, we can't make decisions, and that's, right. that rings true for me.
Right. Don't go to dinner with a Libra because it's just like, it's the chicken or the fish, or the chicken or the fish.
I constantly say, can you help? Just help me.
Got it.
Help myself.
But good people.
I've leaned into it. I can't make a decision. It's fine. Capricorn, what's up with that?
Super smart.
Oh.
That's all you need to know. Super smart, a little bit stubborn, and very determined, and really loyal.
Oh, that's good. Mm-hmm. Early life. That's what we're going to talk about right
Early
now.
Early life.
How you realized you were funny.
I didn't know I was funny until high school. So I grew up watching all the great comedians on TV, right? So Flip Wilson and Mr. Cosby and Carol Burnett and Lucille Ball, although she wasn't a stand-up. So I just grew up loving all of that and all those great variety shows that were on. And I didn't quite know that that was what I was putting in, that I was taking all this in and that I had it within me. So I get to high school and I was chubby and I remember looking at the landscape going, oh no, I'm going to be the fat girl. Because everybody gets a name, right? There's the pretty girl and there's the, you know, the jock and there's the pee-pee boy because there's always a kid that smells like pee-pee. Right? And I was like, oh no, I'm going to be the fat girl. And I knew that that would be an awful existence, right?
Wow, kids so mean.
Because kids are mean. I think it's because we're still figuring ourselves out. We put ourselves in categories.
If I put it on you, then I don't have to be it.
Right, right. Yeah. And I think it's insecurity is what it really is.
True.
And so I remember thinking, well, if I make them laugh, then they won't laugh at me being fat. They'll laugh with me instead of at me. So I would tell jokes or, listen, I grew up in New York, so I have all these crazy accents and cultures to pull from, so I would make up characters, and I absolutely had the best high school experience.
You doing stand up in the cafeteria?
I really was. I did. Oh, I had a routine. So when I was, I would tell my age. I'm 57, and the miniseries Roots was on while I was in school. So I would go to school every day and do a medley of what had happened the night before. So. And by the end of the week, I had a whole bah, 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 bah. Behold the only thing greater than yourself. Like the whole, I'd
gonna name her Kizzy. Kizzy means stay put. Your name is Toby. Your name, my name is Kunta Kinte. Your name is Toby. My name is Toby. Massa Maggie, I beg you, please don't take my baby away.
Like, I had the whole thing. And I would go to the cafeteria and do this.
Do the act out.
And what happened was I ended up becoming class president all 4 years.
Oh, wow.
I ended up on the cheering squad as a twirler. I ended up dating two boys on the football team. So all the things, not at the same time, because I'm not a whore. Thank you. But all the things that fat girl does not
is what
have,
it would make you. But anyway.
Indeed. I became crazy Kim Coles.
Okay.
And not even knowing that I was building, again, this skill that would then later serve
me
to
this day.
But that's
crazy that you got two football players, because they keep saying that men don't like women that are
Listen,
funny.
Well, here's the other thing.
They
do.
I find that to be a myth.
Oh, it's such a myth. They love funny women, just as long as you're not laughing at them
at
the most opportune time.
Word.
Because here's the thing about funny. In order to be funny, and the way that we're funny, means that you have to be smart. Like, we're clever.
Right.
Right? We're clever and we're smart. So men who are drawn to that are amazing, because
right.
they get that you're smart and you're funny.
Right. It's so what you're saying is men who aren't clever don't like funny. Well, they like, I don't even know what you're talking about, girl.
They don't know that they're not the right
They
one
don't
for
know
us.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So you grew up in Brooklyn. What part?
I grew up in Brooklyn. I'm from Flatbush. I started out in Crown Heights and then I was in Flatbush.
Okay, you go back.
I do go back and visit.
Do you see what's happening?
I do.
What do you think about
completely,
that?
I liked Brooklyn was a little grungier. It was a little dangerous.
Yeah.
Like Bedford-Stuyvesant is now Stuyvesant Heights.
Yeah.
There's artisanal cheese. What is an artisanal cheese in Brooklyn? What is that? There were places that you didn't go.
I have
like
no idea.
Like Dumbo was a place you didn't go.
Right.
It was like where people lived under a bridge
why
somewhere.
Why do you think that we are nostalgic for a time when we weren't safe?
Well, you know what's funny? Because it was a little bit dangerous, but it was a little bit wonderful.
I don't think
but
we knew we
wonderful.
Were in danger.
I didn't
it was just
know.
Fun.
I didn't know. Yeah. I didn't know that you shouldn't walk through Bushwick at night.
Right.
But I felt safe because I had, you know, friends or family.
Right.
Or just, listen, let's be clear. I was too corny to go to any of those places where I really would have been stabbed. but you just knew that they existed and they were on the no man's land, just
right.
knowing that they were there. So
adventure. There's no adventure now.
There was an adventure.
Yeah.
That's it.
The adventure now was like, is this going to be a Chase Bank or is it going to be a Capital
Thank
One
you.
On this corner?
Thank
That's
you.
About it.
You know, my favorite was I was walking down the street with my friend and it was a Jamaican man on the street saying, you know what? I feel like shooting a man tonight. I'm like, who's just in the mood to shoot? And we knew we needed to walk briskly to our...
Right.
And I never felt like I was going to die because he
right.
said he was going to shoot a man.
A man.
A man.
Exactly.
I knew it
like,
was
I'm good.
I was a 14-year-old little girl. I knew I was safe. So there was just an energy that existed and there was a cultural experience that existed and I think it's just homogenized now.
So you were in Living Color. That's when...
Yes.
I know we talked about Living Single, but you were also on Living Color.
I did the very first season. Let me say this to you. That was the hardest audition I had ever been on because Keenan wanted comedians who could also do characters.
Word.
So you had to do... I did stand-up at Caroline's.
Did you
I know
do
you know
roots?
Caroline.
No.
I did... Absolutely. I did everything.
Yeah.
I did everything I had. Mm-hmm. I had a beauty pageant bit where I did the five semifinalists of the Miss America pageant.
Okay.
And that was a way for me to do all of my characters. So I had Miss New York, I had Miss New Jersey, I had Miss Beverly Hills, just everyone. And so that was a way for me to show I could do all these characters. So the way you had to audition was first you did stand-up, and then the next day you may have been invited to go do improv.
Right.
And so it was a two-day audition, and then he flew people out to L.A., and then you had to audition against all the other people. It was the most grueling and the most amazing audition
but
ever. Because I got it. And I did the first season.
Did you do like improv training or anything? It was all
I had
you.
Done just enough improv training for me to get past that audition. And what's
right.
interesting is that my other fellow comedians had never done it. We as comics are used to standing
right.
on a stage
I mean, that's
solo.
Yeah.
So for somebody to throw something at you and you have to go, yes, and...
Yeah.
And so it was really weird.
Like,
I was like, just
yeah,
work with me
is
here.
Like, I don't really want to know what you think.
Thank
That's
you,
my
thank
fault.
You.
You know?
But I had done a little bit of training, and I had also, I loved talking to the audience. And so I'm open to playing in that way. And so I was able to help, in my mind anyway, guide the audition for all of us. Like,
yeah.
guys, we got to get along and do this together because
right.
he's looking to see that if we play well with others.
What did that show teach you?
I'll tell you what it taught me. You want to know what really taught me, honestly? That not everything is going to turn out the way you think it's going to turn out. Because I was actually released after the first year. I was released. And it was really difficult at first. And then I booked Living Single shortly thereafter, and then everything was better, yeah, bigger, stronger. Yeah. Like, there was, here's what I learned, that sketch comedy shows are very competitive. Hmm. It's a highly competitive. And if you talk to anybody who's ever done Mad TV, SNL, all those shows, yeah, they're highly competitive, yeah, environments.
And stressful.
And very.
I know some people that they've gone to SNL, and a season later, they look like, yeah, Barack after his, you know, yeah, his 4 years.
It is a war zone because you're, yeah, constantly having to perform beyond, for the boss and beyond.
And beyond more than everyone else.
Yeah. Yeah. And also, you have to compete to get your material on. So the, sure, writers are competing with each, sure, other. The performers are competing with each other.
Oh,
I mean, maybe Jim Carrey didn't have to compete because he was one of a kind.
Yeah, yeah.
And certainly the Wayans didn't have to compete because it was their show.
Yeah.
But there was a strong competition. I had a talk with Tommy Davidson just the other day. We were on a flight together. And I didn't know he was feeling it too. Like, it was a strong competitive experience. I went to Living Single and it was a cooperative. And so it was very different.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And better.
And better for me.
So that makes me think of,
but great experience. I'm glad I had all the experiences. Yes, yes.
Not saying, yeah. I think we got that.
Yeah.
But that makes me think about, you know, just something you hear a lot in comedy, it, just in entertainment, period, that each experience, it never works out how you think it is, and all those things always lead to where you're supposed to be.
Absolutely. And I think that also comes with, you know, doing the spiritual growth piece of it, because you will get angry.
Yes.
Well, you'll get angry and you'll stay angry if you look at each, because, you know, listen, I just met some kid at an airport. He was like, I keep auditioning and I don't get anything. I'm like, that's the name of the game. Yeah. The name of the game is you audition, yeah, and they pick one or two people. It's just, it's a numbers game, and you just have to keep in it and stay good and just know that one time is going to be your shot.
Do you think that the whole, like, Instagram movement and all that has made people a little impatient? That's what it feels like to me.
Yeah, you it's know, so and I
it
think
it makes people think that you become famous overnight, and that's not true.
Right. Yeah. It's not true. I mean, you can become Instagram famous,
sure,
but it's what do you do with that,
yes,
fame, and what do you do with that platform,
right,
that makes all the difference in the world?
Yeah.
Because there's going to be a lot of Instagram famous people who will not be last in 34 years,
exactly,
like one of us.
Yeah. Now.
Right.
Exactly.
And it's more than the fame game. It's the work. It's, to me, it's also, I always respect people who have studied it and studied the it's an art form. It's actually a healing art form. Laughter, you know, we all know that laughter is the best medicine. We as comedians are actually healers in many ways. Haven't you been on stage and you felt the vibe of the audience? They were changed because you performed,
yeah,
and you made
it's
them.
It's a superpower.
It is a superpower.
I feel like.
And it is to be respected,
yeah,
and nurtured in a beautiful,
yeah,
way.
I've gotten letters from people. I'm sure you get it. You know, I was going through this, and then I came to your show, or someone just,
yeah,
died, and this is the first time I've laughed. And
I've gotten hugs from people saying that when Living Single was on, I was going through a really difficult time, and to turn on and see, and like, you all made me laugh. It's,
yeah,
it's huge.
Yeah.
It's huge. And so to respect that, so I would say to any of my Instagram famous comedians, that's great. Now back it up with something. Back,
yeah,
it up with
stage
studying
time
it.
And
stage time. Yes.
And,
yes.
And
yeah.
So in Living Color, then Living Single.
Yeah.
Now, I think I heard about a reboot. Or did I make that up?
No, you didn't make it up. Just people are talking about it.
Right.
But I'd love to tell people I've been neither contracted nor contacted.
Now,
so there's a conversation.
Were, like, are you into it?
I would absolutely say yes.
What's your vision of where they are now?
Oh, gosh. my vision is...
how these houses prices set up, I believe they're in the same building.
Now we bought the building or something.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's interesting. People who... I saw somebody on Instagram saying, you know, everybody's talking about this reboot. I don't want to see a reboot because in their mind, they live in this perfect place of perfection, and
right,
we leave them alone, and it leaves my imagination to decide where they've been. Like, what if we come? For example, Sinclair and Overton always said they were going to have twins, and they were going to name them Sincloverton and Overclare. So that means that if we did a reboot, then that absolutely,
yes,
needs to be in the show.
And it makes it a totally different show.
It makes it a totally different show. So I don't know. I just see the growth of everybody and the... Listen, we're all still friends. And what's funny is that no one will ever admit that we are way closer to our characters than I admit that I am,
yeah,
close. So I think we would just be more of the same. And we all look pretty good still. So I just think it would be just...
So you answer it as well.
I would say yes.
Okay.
I don't... I'll just put it this way. I don't know that everyone would say yes. That's all I'll say. I'm just like, somebody write the lines, let me just say them and get this check. Let me explain something to you about sitcom. It's not just the check, It's not just the family that you build with the camera and the crew, and like you celebrate births and deaths together and marriages and things. It's the free food. It's plentiful and it's delicious. And by your third season or so, they're cooking whatever you want. So right. We had a kitchen on the set that was a real kitchen just for us. So my favorite thing is John Hinton would always get what he called pork Fridays, all pork Fridays. All the rest of us weren't even eating pork. For him, it might not have been. None of us were eating pork anymore, except Johnny's like, I want pork on Fridays. Oh, they made him bacon and ribs and whatever he wanted.
I see y'all stay so cut up with all that free food around.
He just had that metabolism. The rest of us did not.
I don't have the willpower, first
no,
of all.
No, you don't.
Yeah.
Who does?
So you're, you know, infusing your stand-up into speeches and other things that you do, which I heard is like workshops.
Yes.
And seminars. Like,
yes.
What's up with that?
It's, you know, it's all about taking, you know, a skill that you have in one area and applying it in other areas.
Right.
I mean, rather than waiting for opportunities to come to me, I've created opportunities for myself.
Mm-hmm.
So by hanging out my shingle as a speaker, you know, I now have, I'm a brand ambassador with AARP.
Word.
Not just because I'm old, but because I'm old and I'm funny and I'm viable and I'm all the things and I'm the market they're trying to reach. And I'm Kim Coles now.
Right.
So it's about taking what you have and putting it other places. So, and now my latest incarnation, other than, you know, writer, speaker, author, comedian, actress, is teacher. So I've begun teaching story to entrepreneurs. So I think as comedians, we're storytellers.
Right.
So what if I can teach you the way I tell a story, the structure that I have for story, the way to pull your stories out of you and to add humor and heart, as I like to say, so that you as an entrepreneur can attract more customers, more clients, more
cash
in your
business. Get that Shark Tank
money. Right, exactly, exactly. So it's about infusing your business with your story because
right.
that's what makes people want to buy from
right.
you. And so I teach that now. I call it the Love Your Story Workshops.
Okay.
And I call it captivating with story. So as comedians, we're captivating on stage. So I'm teaching other people to do that.
I read somewhere that like public speaking is like above death.
Yeah, it's the scariest
fear.
Thing.
Like, people would rather die.
I'd rather die than get on stage and speak. But here's the trick, though, is that you pull the confidence from someone. So if you don't have the confidence to get up on stage and speak, you pull the confidence from another area of your life and just apply it there. Because the truth is, you know, that thing where they would say, you know, just imagine the audience in their underwear. Well, then I would just end up cracking up. That would make me more comfortable.
Right.
That would make me laugh. Like, ooh, she needs a new brassiere. Ooh, all them drawers got holes in them. Like, that would not help me.
Right.
It's about snatching confidence from an area where you do have it and applying it.
Where your confidence coming from?
That's a good question. My confidence comes from, I see the good in people. So when I see good in folks, and I have this, I get these divine downloads that I don't tell people about. This is the first time I've come out about. I get these divine downloads. So I get confidence from knowing and seeing good in people and praying that they see it in me as well.
Mm.
I also have confidence in knowing that I can walk into a room and make people feel
yeah.
good.
I can see pain in people. Is that
you
weird?
You see pain?
I can. And I feel like I know everyone is dealing with something. So that's, again, the power of making someone laugh
that's
and like taking
gift.
Them off of it. Yeah,
I
really do feel like
it's healing.
Yeah, and I feel like that's why it's upsetting when people take stand up lightly or think
Agreed.
They can just jump into it, because it is really like a gift.
It's a sacred
have.
Gift.
Yeah.
It is a divine
yeah.
sacred gift. I don't
yeah.
know if you'll discuss that with anybody else during this series.
I mean, look.
But just know that you and I know that it's
yeah.
a sacred
yeah.
gift, and it's not to be toyed with.
Yeah.
Mm. The other confidence comes from knowing that I'm on a journey and that I may not know what it's going to look like, but if I just stay true to who I am, then I'll be just fine.
Right.
If I go back to default position, my default position is joy, love and laughter, and seeing the good in other people.
Ooh, I'm trying to get there.
Yeah. But whatever your default is, just
yeah.
go back to default, and then and that's like ground zero for me.
My ground zero is cynicism. But but I mean well.
You
I think that's, you know what I mean? So. I see the good in people. I know it's in there, but
yeah.
it's not always on the top layer.
Right,
so.
But to know that it's there is
yeah.
good enough. That's
yeah.
like, to me, even within cynicism is some optimism
True.
Down in there. Like, I don't know about that. Like,
right.
you're questioning, like, I don't
Let
know.
Let me figure it out.
Let
where
me figure
the good
it out.
Is,
right.
basically.
Right.
Okay, cool. Yeah, that's not. I feel, I did feel something just now.
Yeah.
Kim Coles.
You're welcome. You're welcome, is what I like to say. The other thing, too, I'll tell you, is that something that someone told me early in my career, and I wish I could remember who it was because I need to kiss their feet. It was such a good piece of advice. And it works for show business, but it works for anything else too. So I'm going to use my name, but you can insert your name. Okay. They said, this is how your career is going to go. It's going to start out with, who is Kim Coles? Introducing Kim Coles. Get me Kim Coles. Get me a Kim Coles type. Get me a cheaper Kim Coles. Get me a younger Kim Coles. Who is Kim Coles?
Oh, boy.
So that's the cycle.
Yeah.
So it's just sort of knowing what stage you're at or just experiencing whatever stage you're at and just go like, it's not like I'm a loser. It's not like I'm no longer funny. It's not like I'm no longer beautiful. It's not like I'm no longer, and those things, just say, there's these stages that are going to come.
Of the business.
And I'll never forget auditioning for something against the younger Kim Coles. I was like, oh, I've arrived at that stage. Or even the, we don't want you anymore. Like there was a show I used to do all the time. It was a TV show. And then one time I, you know, requested to be on the show. They're like, no, that's okay. I was like, oh my God, I've reached that stage. It's like, no, I've just moved into another. And I think it flows that way.
I feel like last year was like, be Tiffany Haddish.
Right. Like, well, then they do that too. They go looking for the version of you that's like you, but not you. Like, I'm still here.
Yeah. This is a deep dive section.
Okay.
And we're going to talk about a particular bit.
Y'all give it up for Miss Kim Coles.
Apollo. You know why? The men here have the most original pickup lines. Like, I was standing in the lobby and this guy said to me, yo, baby, you know something? I could rock your world. And I looked at this man, I realized he probably didn't have a subway token to his name. Like, how's he gonna rock my world when he probably can't even ride to it, okay? Okay.
Wow.
Was this your first time at the Apollo?
It might have been the first time I'd done the Apollo.
Okay.
And it was that time when they had, you know, rejuged, and you could go on as in the talent show portion, or you could be brought on as a professional, and I was brought on as a professional. Let me say this to this day.
Oh, so this wasn't, you couldn't get booed on this?
No, you could get booed.
Oh, you could.
Let me
explain.
Okay. I was about to say, the thing about the Apollo is that no matter what level you are,
it's terrifying.
You could be booed at any moment. Professional or not. And I've seen some people who have achieved a status,
right,
and if the audience was not feeling you, they'd get rid of you.
That should be the tagline. The Apollo, you can get booed at any moment.
You can get booed at any time.
Please no.
So I have a healthy respect for that audience because of that.
Right.
And that, I think, was my first time on that show. That's so funny. So someone had said to me, the manager of the comic strip, which is where Eddie Murphy came out of, he said to me, you need to do one of two things. You either need to gain 40 pounds and become the next, you know, big, fluffy, you know, like
Roseanne or something.
At the time, it was Nell Carter. He said, you need to be the next Nell Carter, like really gain the weight and become the next, or you need to lose 40 pounds and become like a babe, like you're too in between, like you're too fat to be skinny and too skinny to be fat.
That still stands today.
Yes.
Yes.
And so I went on an active campaign to drop a great amount of work. I was actually anorexic during that time. I started out healthy, but to maintain it, I ended up on diet pills, hopped up on... Diet pills ain't got nothing on like any other drug. It's like, is everything all right? it was that. And so I got really unhealthy with this weight loss because I was like, I need to look this way. I need to be this thing. I need to do this thing. And so what's funny is that people see me now. This is how I started out. I started out, you know, like this. I ended up losing a great deal of weight. And when people first started seeing me on the Apollo and then on In Living Color, that was new to me. I didn't even know what this body was. I didn't even know. I didn't even know. And like I said, hopped up on pills, and I was an exerciseaholic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I went through that, and I remember like laying on the floor one day and like my heart just beating so hard.
Yes.
I'm like, I am going to die.
Yeah.
And then that's
juxtaposed.
With everyone telling you, you look amazing.
And oh,
they're like,
goodness.
What are you doing?
Yes.
You're like, I am dying.
I am dying and speeding on these pills right now. And so the trick is to now find the healthy balance.
Yeah.
I'm looking for that now, and I've been looking for it for years. But I thought that I needed to look a particular way. And I was told that I needed to be one or the other.
Right.
So when I see that girl, and also my voice was really high back then. Like, oh my goodness.
Were you doing a character?
No, that was just, you know.
That was just your
this
voice.
This is life. Life
this,
takes
this
your.
This grown woman voice
This is
now.
A grown woman's voice, Rodney.
Yeah,
I'm 57 years old. Let me tell you one thing, sweetheart.
And that was naive, and I was, I think it was maybe 25 or 26
years
old.
Oh, man, well, you were killing. all right, so at the end of the episode, we like to play a game of word association. So
oh,
I
okay.
say a word, and then you
yeah,
just say
scared.
The first thing.
Okay.
And live in color.
Competitive, but creative genius.
Genius.
Creative genius. Like, there's stuff that happened in rehearsal that never made it to the air. Creative genius.
Living single.
I call it one of the sparkling jewels of my career. Fun, family, and just one of the best times of my life. Best time of my life.
Hot sauce.
Don't even get away from me.
What?
Gastric. Ask me the word again.
Hot sauce.
Gastric distress. Not, I guess I'm the only black person that.
I was gonna say, what?
I do not like no hot sauce. Ew, ew. I need I don't like spicy. I don't like onions. I don't like peppers. Give me bland food. I'm just fine. I was white before my life. White rice. I mean, I like it seasoned. I like it flavorful,
right.
But not hot.
I mean, that kind of just changed my whole opinion
I'm,
of you as a whole. I don't
I'm
even know if
we're
getting along at this
that's
point.
That's a stomach ache. That's gas waiting to happen for me.
Laughter.
Life. Medicine. Joy. Necessary.
Necessary.
Actually, laughter equals love. And let me say this to you. The first time I really discovered that I was going to do stand-up, I was in a beauty pageant for plus-size women. It was called the BBW, Big Beautiful Woman Pageant. And they told us that there was going to be a competition. And I was like, talent competition, like a real beauty pageant. I was like, I don't have any talent. I was like, oh, I'll just make the audience laugh. I made up a comedy routine about how stupid I think beauty pageants are. And I won first runner-up. And I remember the laughter coming at me on waves on stage. Because before this, I performed in my high school, you know, cafeteria.
Right.
It felt like waves of love hitting me on stage. So for me, laughter feels like love.
Now, this is going to sound like I do a lot of drugs, but don't you feel sometimes you can see it? I can see it.
Absolutely.
Coming at you. Yeah.
Oh, not only can you see it coming at you, there's a thing that happens when laughter is connection. I'm gonna start to cry. So not only is it because you get it,
I'm doing Oprah things over here.
But because you could see it coming at you, and then there's a moment where two people turn to each other and like, oh, she's so funny.
Right.
That made you laugh.
I like her. You like her too. Yeah.
Yeah. So when you get people connecting to each other, it's like, ooh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
That's great.
You get it. You're my people. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much.
This has
been amazing. I'm so glad to meet you.
Same here. I'm excited for where this is going to take
Yay.
You. This is going to be something next.
One thank of those you. Moments.
Woo, woo, woo.
Woo, woo, woo.
And thank you.
I don't know, people. You tell me. I think we need a Living Single reboot at this point, right? Come on, Hollywood. Stop playing. Make it happen. For the culture. Thanks so much for tuning in this week for another episode of Strong Black Laughs. This show is produced by Strong Black Lead and Netflix with Pineapple Street Media. You can find us wherever you find your podcasts. Our jams are by DJ Don Will. You can follow him on Twitter at Don Will. I've been your host, Janelle James. You can find me on Twitter at Janelle J Comic. Make sure you follow Strong Black Lead on all of the socials at Strong Black Lead. And if you enjoyed what you've heard, don't be rude and keep it to yourself. Tell your friends and family about Strong Black Laughs. Don't forget to rate and subscribe to Strong Black Laughs on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.